When the phrase wilderness area is mentioned, you probably won't picture sharing that spot with, say, 1.7 million people. They weren't there all at once, of course, but that's how many people last year dropped by the Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore in Michigan, where correspondent Kim Schneider visits with National Park Ranger Meredith Bauman amid dozens of excited school kids on a field trip. The dunes, as locals like to call them, have recently received a lot of nationwide attention. A few years ago, Good Morning America named Sleeping Dunes the most beautiful place in America. That was music to the ears of those in Congress who made the controversial decision back in 1970 to create this designated national lakeshore. Until then, that protection had been reserved for ocean beauty spots like Cape Hatteras and Big Sur. This was the first of what some call America's Third Coast, in this case a 35-mile stretch of sugar sand beach. The sand reaches upward, too. These dunes just south of Traverse City, Michigan, are the highest mountains of sand in the eastern United States. The dunes make a great perch for photos shot towards the two islands. Those are the sleeping bears of the Chippewa legend that inspired the park's name. The dunes are also fun to climb for kids of all ages. Listen to the puffs and maybe a couple of giggles in Kim's report.
Schneider.
My name is Meredith Bauman, and I'm a park ranger at Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore, which is a National Park Service site in northwest lower Michigan.
When did the Sleeping Bear Dunes become a national park?
It was designated in 1970 as a national lakeshore. It's one of four in the country, all in the Great Lakes. Each national lakeshore is unique in its own way, and this lakeshore is known for its coastal dune systems.
Describe what we're going to see out there as we start exploring the dunes and tell us how they formed.
The Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore is 71,000 acres and it consists of three units on the mainland coast of Lake Michigan and two islands, South and North Manitou Islands. It's a very diverse park. If you were to go out, it's hard to say because every spot is different, but some of the things that you're going to see and some of the reasons why this National Lakeshore was created was because of the extensive forests that are here. What we have here are maple beech forests, big, tall trees. These are second growth forests as areas have been logged, but they've regrown to the point where you really do feel like you're in an old forest. They're beautiful. So you're going to see forest, you're going to see wildlife, lots of wildlife in the park, particularly bird species, but also white-tailed deer, turkey are very common. We do have black bear in the park and lots of other mammals and like I said, lots of very rich in bird species. Some of the other things that you're going to see in the park are these freshwater dunes. Michigan has the largest freshwater dune system in the world. And what's unique about Sleeping Bear Dunes is that we are actually an area known as perch dunes. There's a large plateau, the Sleeping Bear Plateau. It's about 5 square miles. If you imagine the lake's waves and winds being like a conveyor belt, it's taking sand from the lake and pushing it up on these big glacial moraines that are now built up over 400 feet above Lake Michigan. So you're up on these tall bluffs, but they're covered in sand dunes. So it's unique, very dynamic. I mean, the dunes are constantly changing. And again, the way they formed is that glaciers came through this area, carved the Great Lakes. This is very simplified, but carved the Great Lakes, left these large deposits of sand, and over time these sands have created these dunes on top of these large glacial moraines. So again, something you can't really see a lot of other places on the entire planet, and you can come here to Sleeping Bear Dunes and experience them.
A lot of places lose land, and it sounds like you're gaining it. It comes from the bottom of the lake up.
Well, we're gaining and losing it sometimes at the same time. We actually do have areas that kind of slump into the lake sometimes. But more than gaining and losing, I think the thing that's interesting here is it's just always changing. You know, the sand is constantly moving. If you're out on the dunes, you're going to feel that sand against your face. It's moving. So on the backside of the dune, what's known as the dune climb. It's one of those very popular areas of the park, over 140 feet of basically a big wall of sand. And what has happened is that sand has been pushed across the glacial moraine and is being dumped down the other side. And that's moving. It's inching along every year. This year I've seen trees that in the spring you could see most of them are now completely buried. I mean, these dunes are moving inland from the lake.
And I would imagine it's a pretty popular site. I know you were voted most beautiful place in America by Good Morning America. And how has that affected your visitation? How many people come and climb that dune climb and explore here? Do you know?
Well, our visitation, the year after the designation as the most beautiful place in America, we had over 1.5 million visitors that came to the park. Right now, we're on track to probably seeing that again this year. It could be close to 1.5 million. So we've become a very popular destination from not only people in Michigan, but people really all over the country and internationally. I think people have come to realize this is a great place to not only come and enjoy Lake Michigan and the beaches, but there's great hiking, there's great camping. We now have what's known as the Sleeping Bear Heritage Trail, which is about a 13-mile multi-use trail in the park for bike riding, walking. Again, it's become one of those destinations where there's so many things to do, and it's very economical for a family. Right now, a 7-day pass is $10 for an entire carload of people. Or if you want to get an annual pass, it's good for an entire year from time of purchase, it's $20. So people in the area can come out here and enjoy the park time after time after time and really have a great family experience for very little money. So.
And where the National Park Service is turning 100 this next year. Are people surprised to find a treasure like this in the middle of the country? I mean, we think of the big old parks in the West, Glacier and Yellowstone. And how's this? Do people find this as a surprise?
I think they do, because I think what the National Park Service has found is that when people do think of the National Park Service, they think of those big iconic Western parks, the Y parks, the Yellowstones, the Yosemites, the Grand Canyons. But, you know, there are over 400. There's 408 National Park Service sites currently designated within the country. So, you know, most people, sometimes they don't even realize that their backyard is a national park. They know it is this great place to come and visit. So I think the Centennial is a place for us to kind of reintroduce ourselves to people and say, we're a national park. This belongs to you. This is your park. This is for you to come and visit, to enjoy, and to find out that there might be parks in their own area. I mean, do people in Detroit know that there's an area called River Raisin National Historic Site or National Battlefield? Do people know that Sleeping Bear Dunes is a national lakeshore? And why that's just important, again, is for people to realize that these are designated and set aside to be preserved for the American people. You know, they're public areas. These will never be housing developments. There will never be condos on the shoreline. This has been set aside because it is so special that it was determined that we wanted this to be something that all people could come and enjoy.
In the background, we hear a lot of school children here on a field trip. Talk about how you're trying to reach out to that generation. And we hear a lot about this generation being on their devices, being indoors. And what do you see happening when you get groups of kids like this climbing that dune of sand? And
it's very easy to get them off their devices. Because they're here, they're immersed in it. They can have fun. They can run down a dune. They can go for a hike. They can dip their toes in the lake. The Centennial goal is to reach out and create new advocates of the what we're calling the millennial generation. Those young people that maybe don't have as much exposure to nature as some of us as we were growing up. You know, the family camping trip may not be as common, or that big family trip out west to go to some of those big national parks may not be as common anymore. But we really do want kids to understand this is a place for them, it's a place they can have fun. And I think what's great about this lakeshore is that a little over 33,000 acres is designated as wilderness. It's wilderness that you can come and explore in a relatively easy way. You can come and kind of, hey, I want to check out what wilderness is about. Maybe I want to do a little backpacking and I want to go out to North Manitou Island and I want to backpack with my kids to give them this wilderness experience. And it's relatively inexpensive and it's relatively easy. It's not like going to Gates of the Arctic in Alaska where, you know, it's a huge time commitment or it's a huge financial commitment. Here you can come, you can experience wilderness and go, wow, you know, that was pretty incredible. I want to come and explore other places like this. So I like to think of this park as a gateway. It's a place where kids like the ones that we hear today, they're having fun in nature, they're enjoying themselves, and it makes them want to be lifetime people that enjoy the outdoors.
What are some places that we shouldn't miss if you come? I know I'm part of the Pierce Stocking Scenic Trail. Can you maybe talk about that? I know that's one way that really lets people access the park and some of the most beautiful scenes and maybe photo vantage points. in a pretty easy way.
They think of Pier Stocking Scenic Drive and they think of the Dune Climb, which are amazing areas, but there's so much more to this park too. There's over 100 miles of hiking trails, so there's 13 hiking trails in the park to enjoy. There's the Manitou Islands to get out to. There is amazing cultural sites that are preserved here that maybe kind of take for granted. There's an area called Port Oneida Rural Historic District, and it's 3,500 acres, and it has close to 100 buildings in it that are rural, that are farm buildings that, and a lot of us that grew up in rural America or grew up on farms, you know, you don't think of them as so special, but they're disappearing. You know, those family farms are disappearing. And here's a place you can come to and you can see what farming was like at the turn of the 20th century and how these communities grew up and supported each other and were able to make a living and raise their children in what turned out to be not so great conditions for growing traditional crops. The sand and the sometimes harsh winters. So Port Oneida Rural Historic District is a great place to visit. There's also other great cultural things in the park, like Glen Haven. Glen Haven is an old wooding village. I mean, the kids that are here right now came by bus. Well, they had to probably stop at a rest stop somewhere and use the facilities, get something to drink, stretch their legs. Well, the highway in much of the 19th century and early 20th century was the lake. There were no roads up here. There were no highways. People were using the lake to get from Chicago to Buffalo, New York. And so areas like Glen Haven were the rest stops. They were the places where people would stop, you know, if they needed to mail a letter, if they needed to stop at a hardware store and get something. They had a blacksmith shop. So Glen Haven is preserved. A lot of these villages, they're gone. They were kind of temporal. They served a purpose. They were places where the boats would stop and get their wood. Most of them are gone now, but here's another place where you can stop and see and get a glimpse of the past. There's also, we have a maritime museum. There were three U.S. life-saving stations in the park. Two on the island, one on south, one on north, and one on the mainland at Sleeping Bear Point. So when you're at Glen Haven, just a half mile down the road, is an old life-saving service station. That morphed into the Coast Guard, so it was a Coast Guard station after 1915. You can come and see how were these ships that were coming through what's known as the Manitou Passage, how were they being protected? There's hundreds of shipwrecks in this passage because of the treacherous sands and sandbars. So there were men that would brave the weather to go out and rescue people, and you can learn about that here.
I understand you have a unique way of demonstrating those rescues with a kind of a classic.
Yeah, we have park rangers here that their fun job is to educate people or to help people learn about the history here. So we do something called a Heroes of the Storm, where we actually demonstrate how a rescue would have been done. If a ship was in trouble, it would try to run to shore to get as close to shore as possible. Well, they would often ground themselves. Well, then how did the surfmen, the light keepers, how did they save those people on the ship? We actually demonstrate it. And then once a week in the summer, we actually fire what's known as a Lyle gun. It's one, if not the only cannon that was ever created to save lives instead of take them. It's actually a way of shooting a line out to a stranded boat to then be able to pull people onto shore. And we actually fire that gun into Lake Michigan. So it's quite loud, it's quite dramatic, and it's something that people love to see just because it's very unique.
Don't you save Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy? Is that who does your demo?
Yep, we save Raggedy Ann and Andy from drowning. So, and we use kids, which it makes it so fun for them because they really do get into it.
The one thing we haven't talked about is the name and how that came about. Why is it the Sleeping Bear Dunes?
There's a wonderful Native American Anishinaabe legend or story about a prominent point on the Dune Plateau. At one time was quite large, lots of trees, and that was the Sleeping Bear. And the story is that in a land that's now known as Wisconsin, there was a forest fire that pushed a mother bear and her two cubs out into what's now called Lake Michigan. They swam all the way across to the shore, and the mother crawled up on top of the dune to wait for her cubs. The cubs didn't make it, and she lay down and she fell asleep there. And because of her care for her young and the fact that she was trying to look for them, the great Manitou raised the two cubs as the Manitou Islands so that the mother bear could always be looking out on her cubs. So it's quite a touching story, quite an interesting story, and it's how the area got its name. So.
How many people do you have crying after you tell them that little tale?
I don't know. I guess if you do it right, yeah, maybe. Because it is. It's an amazing story to think, you know, just that image of the mother bear waiting for her cubs that never made it. You know, it is. Yeah, it's a very touching story.
You want to talk about the native history of the area, and how is that celebrated in the park beyond the legend?
The story of the sleeping bear is something that we very much try to tell people about. And just, you know, we try to share the use of this land over time. I mean, people have always been using this land, first as an area of traveling through or as settling. And there's many, many archaeological sites in the park that we protect and preserve and try to tell those stories that we know in the best way that we can. My name is Meredith Bauman. I've worked for the National Park Service for 25 years now, and this is a great park to be at. It's one that I think people really enjoy.
Thank you, Meredith, for your time, and now we're going to go climb a dune. Thank you. I'm Kim Schneider, and I'm reporting from the Philip Hart Visitor Center in the Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore.
We've done it over at the dune climb a bunch of times. I can't even count them. But this is more fun.
It's deeper.
How far do you think you guys get to fly through the air when you jump?
5 or 6 feet, maybe 10.
You've been listening to Associate Producer Kim Schneider, reporting for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show featured weekly on NPR.org, a production of NPR affiliate station KCBX Public Radio serving the California Central Coast. The underbed music in this show, Petite Brompton, was performed by award-winning Canadian musician Daniel Casavant.